Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with music director Dr. Allison D'Amato and actors Diane Phelan and Jonathan Young about Starring Buffalo's upcoming production of Titanic the Musical. Starring Buffalo is a local theater company that aims to connect, entertain, and educate through top-quality musical theater. They were inspired by New York City's City Center Encore series, which features short-run, unstaged musicals with Broadway stars. Starring Buffalo brings together top Broadway talent, professional actors from Buffalo, and community or school choirs to create incredible theatrical experiences. Titanic the Musical plays May 31st and June 1st at Shays 710 Theater. Tickets are available at shays.org. In this episode, we discuss the enduring appeal of the Titanic story, the preparation for a Starring Buffalo production, and the importance of diversity in casting. First up is Dr. Allison D'Amato. Allison, thank you so much for chatting today. How are you?
I'm very well, Dan. Thanks so much for asking me.
Awesome. Well, and I know it's especially a busy time right now, kind of as with all of your sort of many different jobs kind of coming to an end or a close or an opening or a new beginning. What are you working on right now?
Well, it's true. It is kind of amazing how things just collide all at the same time of the year, but it's a wonderful time of the year. I'm in the second year of a tenure track position at Eastman School of Music, which has been wonderful and a really wonderful, rich place to be. Mostly that involves classically based opera voice kinds of genres, although there's a healthy amount of singers that absolutely love music theater. So it's nice to bring that element of my life into that world as well. So that semester is wrapping up, you know, and there's a German song competition called the Kneisel Lieder competition that just happened last week, and the winner's concert is during commencement weekend this coming weekend. So that's kind of the immediate end of that year. And Starring Buffalo is always such a beautiful thing to just dive into right after that, because it's a chance to sort of work with a different community. And this show I'm particularly excited about, actually. I was just meeting with Drew earlier to go over some of the musical shaping and things. And what's really lovely about Titanic is that it's so operatic in its sound world and in how Yeston kind of uses music to really just keep the tensions and the sort of trajectory of what the story that I think we probably all know, you know, but the tensions between the people and the sort of ways that the characters do interact and their lives unfold on the ship, it's just very much operatic. So I feel like sometimes Starring Buffalo is a crossover into music theater, but now I feel like I'm bringing the operatic work that I'm doing into the Starring Buffalo world. So it's kind of a nice shift.
That is incredible. Being at Eastman, sort of working with Starring Buffalo, are you from Western New York originally?
No, but I'm starting to feel more and more like I am. No, I'm from the Boston area originally. I grew up in Boston, and before I went to college, I was heavily involved in sort of New England Conservatory's preparatory program, and so I was in that world. But then when I wanted to go to college, I wanted to get as far away from that home as possible, I think as teenagers do. So I went to Ohio, I went to Cleveland and Oberlin first, but then Cleveland, and then sort of am easing my way between Ohio and Boston somehow. I don't know.
That's hilarious. Is there a project from or a story or something from your youth that directly connects to what you do now?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think when I even think about what I do now, it seems still to be, you know, a little bit feet in both worlds of music theater and new music, and also, you know, tried and true traditional classical rep. So what I think I really go back to is when I was 17 through 20, that sort of age range. And I started going to college, you know, I went to Oberlin Conservatory, like I said, and that was all about being a classical pianist, really. But I started playing for singers right away. I love singers, always have loved working with both singers themselves and also their repertoire and text, storytelling and text. And my parents, who were not musicians at all, but did love theater, they were working with this woman who actually owned a computer tech writing company, but she also was a director for tons of regional and community theater. And so she hired me for 2 summers as music director for this little barn of a theater up in Maine. And we slept above the theater, you know, it had like 4 bedrooms or something. And it was this great little regional summer thing. And we did I Do the first summer. And then we did Closer Than Ever by Maltby and Shire, which is one of my favorite ensemble pieces, I think, for that, you know, from that memory. And it was just me on piano, and I was just, you know, playing the whole thing and working with the actors day in and night out. And I don't know, I think I just, that's the fun time. That's, you know, if I want a vacation, that's where I want to be, even though it's not like it's free time.
Oh, it certainly is not in the sort of the schedule and demands of any kind of theater production, but especially a compressed one is by no means a vacation. But we always think like, well, it's, you know, it's 3 weeks in Ohio, it's 2 weeks in Michigan, like how exciting.
That's right. So,
right. It really is like an incredible working, a very hard working, and I'm going to use air quotes here, they can't see me, vacation to sort of do that.
That's right. But it's a rush, right? It's a moving thing to have to work so quickly, and you meet the people, you know, that you're working so closely with, and you have to bond right away.
Yeah, there's also a synergy too, right? Because like, if there's too much time kind of in any sort of rehearsal process, it just drags out so long. And then some of that magic, some of that, oh no, is this going to happen?
Yes.
Kind of goes out of it. And then it just becomes sort of safe and dull. So you always need a little bit of that kind of compressed time.
Yes, I agree.
How would you describe your position or your artistry? Would you call yourself, a pianist? Would you call yourself a musician? Would you call yourself a collaborative pianist? What words would you use to say what you do?
Gosh, I think I would always put pianist first. I mean, because I feel like even when I'm coaching singers or when I'm conducting from the piano, I still feel like everything comes from my relationship to music through the piano, you know, whether it's about shaping or whether it's about, you know, just pacing and dynamics and clarity, voicing. I pianist first. You know, the term collaborative pianist has been alternatively in vogue and also frustrating for a lot of people in my world because it was sort of originally an academic title, you know, when they started to have places at Juilliard and you know, programs for training pianists. But I think pianist, and then the fact that collaboration is so where I gravitate, you know, those projects, like everything that I really love to do is collaborative. So collaborative pianist to me is not at all academic. It's very kind of true. So maybe that.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. I always like to ask this question because I think it sometimes will really unlock things when I speak to people. And is there a project in your past that you're extremely proud of that you could share with us?
You know, for many years, and I still technically am, co-artistic director of this really wonderful song organization called Floristan Recital Project. And I sort of slipped and used the past for a second because we're very active as a song series, and we toured and did residencies at various places. And things are a little bit more dormant now. We're working on a couple of recording projects, but not so much about, you know, having a regular concert series at a place. So it's a very different schedule than it was 8 years ago or 10 years ago. But Floristan was all about working with vocal music, with lots of different singers, in multifaceted projects, different, you know, even if it started in classical music, there were lots of commissions that would go into theatrical realms sometimes. There was an evening length song cycle that we worked with the composer on, and gave the sort of regional premieres of that over a few years. And those projects were extremely close to my heart. And again, I think that they shaped a lot of what I care about, because the love of language and the love of collaboration was, seemed to have, you know, endless things to explore. And so I'm really proud of the body of work that Floristan evolved, and it's still on the website. You know, there's lots of recordings, there's lots of listings for the pieces that we've commissioned over the years, and the stories that got told. And the music is out there, you know what I mean? We brought a lot of songs into the world that I know are still done. We commissioned a wonderful American composer, Libby Larson, to write a cycle for baritone and piano, which turned into this song cycle that tells the story of the America's first serial killer, Dr. H.H. Holmes. And it was set, you know, around that Chicago World's Fair, which was 1890, I can never remember the exact year, 95, I think. 93. Anyway, and fascinating piece, and that's been done all over the world, you know. So I'm think I'm proud of that, you know, in terms of past projects.
That's amazing. I always like to kind of follow that up, although you answered it a little bit, but I'd love to open the window and see sort of what flies out. And asking, you know, is there anything that you learned from that project that you take away that kind of influences the way that you do things today?
Yes, I'm sure there's many things. One of the things that I feel like I'm getting better at doing, especially as I get older and as I move into different positions, is to trust that, well, first of all, to not be a complete control freak about things getting done or about other people doing things on my timeline. And to trust that, you know, if you are going to be a collaborator, you have to work with other people. I mean, that's just the definition. But sometimes I would throw up my hands, right, and say, ugh, the trouble with collaborating is that you have to work with all these people. But, you know, the people are the best part, you know, of these projects. And so to find that sweet spot of flexibility, but also schedule and, you know, continue, you know, forward moving processes in each way, and just letting each project kind of define itself a little bit in terms of just how those things do, how it does get done. Because everybody has their own timeline, and you can control certain things, but if you try to control everything, you're just going to be stressed out all the time. And, you know, we love music, we love theater, I love telling these stories, but more often than that, it is not a life and death situation. And so if something isn't done on one particular day, you know what, it's okay, you roll with it. And the most important thing is working with people, telling stories, connecting to audiences, those kinds of things.
That is a beautiful answer. Thank you. I'm so glad I followed up and pushed with the question.
Oh, good.
That's wonderful. Speaking of sort of collaboration and a very kind of particular timeline, would you please just tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing for starring Buffalo's Titanic?
Yes, I would love to. And full disclosure, I'm just diving into it now. So I'm starting to get a real sense of the piece. And we start rehearsals with the actors, with the Buffalo-based actors, on Saturday. So this is my third production with starring Buffalo. And I love what Drew does. I love the Starring Buffalo mission and sort of the parameters of it. Because
can I push back a little bit there, or can I push a little there and say, what do you love about it? Because everyone I've interviewed, myself included, has said, I love what they're doing. But sure. For a person who might be hearing this for the first time, what is it that they're doing that's so special?
Sure, I will tell you. Yeah, because I really loved this from the second Drew started to create it in his brain. And it really is meant to connect Buffalo actors and audiences, of course, to the Broadway actors that are working now, and bring that kind of level of passion and commitment into, you used the word synergy before, but into that sort of immediate contact with the Buffalo actors. And also there's always a choir that involves people from the community, younger actors that are coming up or coming out of school. For many years, he was involving high school choruses that would then get some contact with these Broadway actors and other people in that industry. And he does it all in this tightly organized, like you say, compressed time frame. So it's an amount of commitment and focus that we can all bring to the room, but it also just gathers together so many people from these different demographics. And so people are excited, right? People get excited to meet people from New York that might be, you know, that's where they're aspiring to go. They make connections, they network, but also they just, you know, part of being on stage in such a tightly tight time frame is that you learn to play off of each other very quickly. So you get stimulated and surprised by what, you know, how they throw the ball to you in that scene and how you toss it back. And so it's that kind of thing. It creates that really exciting immediacy of storytelling in the room, but then also just makes connections with people that are incredibly meaningful.
Thank you so much. I interrupted the question, and so I'd like to throw it back just to
Okay.
say, with this sort of collaboration and all of these people and all these balls being thrown, can you tell us about sort of your position with inside of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the music director for the production for Titanic, and that basically means I will be playing the piano and conducting from the pit. The pit orchestra is going to be a string quartet and percussion. And I'm going to meet with them next week and read through the score. So it's a very particular arrangement of this score that I am excited to hear. I haven't heard it yet. I've heard it in my mind. Of course, the keyboard part has all sorts of, you know, it's a package from Music Theatre International, right, that has all this different sounds. I'm sure there's plenty of ship sounds and things like that that's built into my keyboard playing instead of just sounding like a piano. So, but it will be a small pit, which allows us to be in the pit because, frankly, the pit at Shays 710 is not huge. And I'm looking forward to that chamber music, you know, aspect of the orchestration. And then I also, of course, am conducting the actors and conducting all the music as it goes on. And so we'll be rehearsing with each actor playing each role. And then, of course, group scenes and the group numbers will come together within the schedule as well. So the rehearsal playing is in my domain as well. And Karen Saxon, I'm going to shout out to Karen Saxon because she has also been music director for other Starring Buffalo productions, and she's fantastic. And she's been in charge of putting together the big community choir. I think this is the biggest community choir that Starring Buffalo has had, which makes sense for this operatic lush score. And she's been preparing them as a separate sort of part of the music preparation. And then she and I will sort of be working together as we get closer to production. So yeah, and what I understand, although I don't know if I should give this away, but I haven't heard that it's secret, but instead of the entr'acte for that's built into Yestin's show, the community choir under the direction of Karen will be doing an arrangement of My Heart Will Go On from the Titanic movie, which I just think is a fantastic idea because, of course, that song is synonymous with the Titanic, as far as I'm concerned.
That is incredible. Oh my goodness. We'll
Yeah.
leave that in the podcast just so if people hear it, they'll hear it here and only here.
Sure.
But it won't go in the article. So that's kind of really fun and exciting. What do you hope will resonate with audiences?
You know, it's interesting to revisit this story. I didn't know Mari Yestin's Titanic before this. I mean, I knew some scenes. But I didn't know the overarching script. And what I think is really wonderful and interesting and ultimately really moving, I'm starting to really fall in love with this show because it's framed and literally framed, like the very first song and then the very ending finale is called In Every Age. And it's basically about how in every age throughout mankind, humankind, we have striven to create things of impossible greatness, of impossible magnitude, and just reach for the stars, you know, that kind of thing. You know, and they point to the pyramids of Egypt, they point to the Great Wall of China, you know, these just massive but human-made things. And Titanic, of course, was absolutely in that vein. And what the effect has for me, so there's two ways in which this musical is kind of affecting me. And one is, of course, the way that music starts to attach to different characters, and there's some real love stories in here too. And of course, they all, not all, not everybody drowns, but so many of them do. So their connections and the depth of their feeling become all the more part of this deep story and tragedy. But it's framed by this idea that humans will always strive. And even in the face of this terrible disaster, there's going to be another ambitious project that people try to improve upon, you know? And I think it's meant to be optimistic, you know? And it strikes me as that it's a very grand sort of ode to humanity's unending ambition.
That's beautiful, my gosh. How do you hope that audiences, kind of with that in mind and kind of looking at the sort of grandness and the scale of human ambition, how do you hope audiences, specifically after hearing Titanic the musical, leave the theater?
Well, I do think uplifted. I think, you know, this happened on such a scale. This disaster at sea was on such a scale, partly because Titanic itself was such a huge ship, but also there's a point in the score, and probably in lots of historic annals as well, where it's recognized that, you know, there were the richest people in the world were on board the ship, right? And also the third class passengers that were, you know, trying to come to America for a better life. And you know, again, the great thing about this musical is that it really tries to tell all their stories. There's very specific music associated with each character, you know, the finest waltzes, this elegant sort of waltz music for the upper class passengers, and then this sort of Irish jig that comes in with the lower class passengers, you know. So the hierarchies are clear, but of course what happens is that they are all equalized. And so it's this way, I mean, look, not that I don't think that Mari Esten was thinking this when he framed this score. But so much of the work that I'm thinking of, especially in my teaching position, is equity, is inclusion, is these kinds of things. And among, you know, along with just the grandeur that Titanic tried to embrace, it also, the tragedy equalizes everybody, you know? And there's incredibly moving moments in the show where, you know, somebody gives up their seat on a lifeboat for somebody else. And how people, even in the face of this, you know, find the best parts of themselves and they just come in for a glimpse, you know. And then also, of course, there's a couple of characters that are horrible, you know, and you get a glimpse of that too. So that way of that humanity is not you know, the best people and the worst people have nothing to do with the richest and the poorest, you know.
Thank you so much. Sure. Thank you so much for your generosity. Those are my questions, but I always like to end any interview with just asking, is there anything you feel left unsaid or anything else you'd like to share about this project?
You know, I really just want to say, come out to see this really wonderful musical. I don't think, if people don't know Titanic, and I don't think a lot of people do, it's not done very often. I mean, just being a set designer alone, I think that would be extremely intimidating. But the great thing about starring Buffalo and the way in which the story is told with minimal sets, you know, really with no sets, there are projections, there's going to be plenty of visual things to support the story. But to be able to get that sort of enormous epic kind of story with this grand, beautiful music, and really focus on the actors, focusing on the humanity of the story. That's what Starring Buffalo does. And this show is a great opportunity to get the impact, I think.
Fantastic. Allison, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It was fantastic speaking with you today. And I look forward to seeing you in Starring Buffalo's Titanic.
Thank you so much, Dan. It was great to talk to you.
Diane Thielen, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
I'm good, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. It is so great to have you here. So I'd like to start off just by asking, have you ever been to Buffalo before?
I have. So we opened the Into the Woods tour, the 10 city special engagement tour right after Broadway in Buffalo. So Buffalo was the first city that we performed in after Broadway. And let me tell you, it was nobody was expecting how incredibly loving and effervescent this audience was. It was Buffalo was one of my favorite memories of performing.
That's great. Well, we're so excited to welcome you back.
Thank you.
I like to always ask my guests on the podcast, is there a story from your childhood that relates to what you do now?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I thought I was going to go be a scientist. And I was looking at becoming a biologist. I loved biology. In fact, I wanted to study microbiology and work with viruses and that kind of thing. And sophomore year of high school, we were doing Hello, Dolly. And I just remember being like second from the right in the number, put on your Sunday clothes. I'm in my 2-inch capizios, chugging at the end. We'll come home. And I just remember my little high school self, my heart was exploding, being like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And the rest is history.
That's fantastic. Did you immediately start working after high school? After the sort of chugging in Hello Dolly, did you go to school afterwards? What happened?
Yeah, I ended up at Tisch at NYU studying theater because I was looking at other schools to study science. And I don't know, I just, Tisch called me and I ended up in the musical theater program there. And, and then that was it. That was it for me. There was no more microbiology in my life after that.
That's fantastic. Is there a project that you have been sort of extremely proud of in your career?
Oh, yeah. I always talk about this one thing. I did a production called Where Elephants Weep in Cambodia. It was commissioned by an NGO there to refurbish the life and the arts in Cambodia after the Khmer Rouge, to kind of bring the artists and community members and theater audiences back after that period of time, because a lot of the artists had not had a large scale production. And so they brought artists over from North America and used the Khmer artists, Cambodian artists, to put together this synergistic piece. And it was amazing watching in real time the arts kind of take root there and re-flourish through this production that was held on like a national level. And it was like televised nationally as well. And I would say to date, you know, even with the Broadway shows and the amazing productions I've been a part of, this was one of the most special things that I have ever taken part of, because it was using art to heal a nation, a trauma that nation had endured. So it was nothing really tops that.
No, I think that's incredible. I'd love to kind of push a little bit further into that. And the question, the sort of follow-up question I had for you, although it feels in some ways reductive, but I don't mean it this way, because I'm a college professor and sometimes my students listen to the podcast. And they're always super excited when, you know, an actor or performing artist is on it because they want to hear about that. That is what I teach. And so I guess what did you learn, or what were the takeaways from that project that maybe sort of shifted your ideas or your life as an artist?
Well, I realized that art didn't have to just be commercial. So, and art can be large scale and still used to, like as a method of healing, in a medicinal way, you know, like I had this, you know, my girlhood urges to go into medicine. Using art as medicine was really exciting. But yeah, you know, there's many different kinds of art, and there's many different kinds of theater, and there's many different kinds of production. And I think the best kinds are when you can really use art to raise a community up in one way or another, to reflect back who we are, whether it's on a global scale, whether it's on a national scale. You know, I think art for me is most exciting when it does that.
That's super exciting to have you then coming in for Starring Buffalo, which is reflecting in some ways back the Buffalo arts community. What's exciting about coming to Buffalo and working on Titanic?
Well, that's exactly what you said. For me, what I realized when I was in Buffalo was this incredibly thriving arts community there. It just made me want to be back in Buffalo. So the minute I was asked to be part of this, I was like, whatever you guys want me to do, I'm coming back to Buffalo. I just had such a wonderful experience.
Tell us a little bit about the roles you're playing. Or role. Okay.
So I'm playing the role of Alice Bean, and I'll be honest here. I was never familiar with this version of Titanic before being cast in this production. There is a very specific reason for that. So I'm an actress of color. I am half Filipino, half Irish American. And there, when I was growing up, no one was hiring me to play Alice Bean or Kate McGowan or any of those roles in Titanic. And so it just was one of those things. I was like, oh, Titanic, that's nice. That's for other people. It's not really for me. And the joke's on me because this is the most gorgeous score I've ever heard in my life. And every time, now that I'm getting to know it, I'm listening to it and reading through it, I'm just beside myself, the depth of the story. And like, it's an immigrant story. It's about people and their dreams and coming to America. And I think that's something that many people in America can identify with, no matter what they identify with racially. And so, I'm really excited to take on this role of Alice Bean, which is not traditionally cast with someone with my energy and look. So, it's really exciting seeing the inclusive casting in our production and in productions that are starting to happen all over the states about this.
That's fantastic. This may be an unfair question. I don't even know how I would answer it, but sometimes I just like to ask unfair questions and see sort of what happens. But what do you think the enduring appeal of Titanic is? Just the story of it.
I've been thinking about this, and I had a couple of conversations with people. The Titanic has like a lore in humanity. There's a lesson there. It's a lesson about hubris. It's a lesson about there's a lesson about hubris, but in this particular story, I think it's really about how humanity, there's something in there about humanity trying to reach their dreams, and the people that survived were like, oh my God, they survived and went on with their lives. But the people who did, there's it was such it's such an extreme situation, this unsinkable ship, right? And then it was sinkable, and the way humanity kind of went out and was like, this is how we're gonna go out on this ship and go live our dreams. And then it was like such a tragic it was just, it's such a tragedy. I don't know. I'm still wrapping my mind around it. What about you? What do
No,
you think?
same. I mean, as you were saying that too, like one thing that I think really connected for me as you were speaking was the idea too, when you said Titanic is an immigrant story. And I went right back to kind of the idea of that sort of Ellis Island ragtime, like I was hearing that in my mind as you were saying that, where it is also something, it is this story about hubris. It is this story kind of about the danger of the natural world that sometimes we take for granted. Like we see this tiny iceberg and it's this huge thing underneath. But I also think it's like this. I think for me, one of the touchstones of Titanic is like the unsinkable Molly Brown, like this woman that beat this iceberg, or on also just the idea that like it's about class and class disparity and kind of how that is organized inside of America. It's almost like this weird metaphor for America.
Yes, I just got chills when you said that because I think the reason it lives so deeply in all of our, I don't know why I keep thinking about this, but it's like the Roman Empire. People talk about like the Roman Empire lives in their mind rent free. It's kind of like Titanic has this, the story of Titanic has these like implications on many levels of. And I'm like losing track of what I'm trying to say here, but there's like it's a huge myth, and it's not so far away. It's not like the Roman Empire. This happened just, it was less than, it was a little bit more than a century ago, which is people in, we know people who are alive, or we've been related to people who are alive during that period of time.
Yes. And as you say it too, right, it has taken on mythic proportions. It is sort of a it like and it's not a myth, it really did happen, but it has this sort of aspect of myth around it, which is just so so smart. I think we solved it. I think Drew can listen to this and get the director's note right there. And there we go.
That's right.
How will you prepare for the special concert staging of Titanic?
Well, I'm just trying to get to know the music as best as I can. So I've just been listening to it on car trips, folding laundry. I'm kind of letting it sink into me deeply the way I would let any other musical that would sink into me deeply. That's kind of how I learn. I do it consciously and subconsciously, so it kind of gets in on many different levels, and I kind of feel my way through it. And then I'll get down into the music. I'm working on another show right now, and so like I have to actually look at that music, so I can't, I just try not to get them mixed up. So I'm just listening to it passively because my brain works on music when I'm not even looking at it. So that's a gift.
Amazing. I don't know that why it does gift. That, but that is a gift. How do you think audiences will leave the theater after Titanic the musical in Buffalo?
I think they're going to be thrilled because we have a huge cast and chorus singing this incredible music. What is so thrilling about this is the music. I mean, of course, it's the story of Titanic, right? But the music is just lush and large, and it's enlivening. And I mean, every time I listen to it, I'm just moved to tears. So I think audiences are in for a treat. And I know people say that phrase all the time, but I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Well, I think you're right though too, because I mean, I think that you are much, 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 much younger than I am. But I remember it being kind of like on the Rosie O'Donnell show and all this sort of stuff of like, is the boat working? Is the boat not working? With a concert staging, we sort of hear kind of what's under the water, as opposed to like, is the boat going to work or is it not going to work? And I think that that's super exciting and cool too.
I agree. I mean, what's great about concerts specifically is that you get to focus on the music, right? We get to just hear the orchestrations. We get to hear the voices. Everyone just kind of gets to park and bark and sing it. And that, you know, that to me is just a very pure form of enjoying something. I'm excited.
Fantastic. I want to be mindful of our time. Those are my questions, but I always like to end any interview by asking, you know, is there anything that you feel left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't want to minimize the importance of what Drew and starring Buffalo has done in casting the story of Titanic inclusively for American stages now. I think it's really important. And I think that, you know, as our country goes through looking to nail down our national identity, being as inclusive of the voices that are there is the most important thing. You know, as an Asian American human being, because of the way Asians have been written out of history, it was news to me that Filipinos were in America before cowboys were, that Asians, you know, built the railroad, they had been landowners, you know, really, really, really far back and have been part of the history, you know. So being able to have inclusive casting just for myself to be aboard the Titanic is a really big deal. And I think that is kudos on Starring Buffalo for having that kind of inclusive casting. I'm really excited to be telling the story.
I got chills. Thank you very much for your time. It was really spectacular talking with you. Thank you so much.
Me too, Dan. Thank you so much.
Great. Have a great day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, here we go. Jonathan, how are you today?
Not too bad. How's it going, Daniel?
Doing very well. I'd love to ask, have you been to Buffalo before?
I grew up in Williamsville. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I went to Williamsville North High School. I grew up in East Amherst and born and raised my whole life until I left when I was 18 to go to college.
Gotcha. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Baldwin Wallace Conservatory right outside of Cleveland.
Fantastic. Is there a story from your youth that relates to what you do now?
Oh, God. There's everything in my youth relates to what I do now. I was really entrenched in the Buffalo theater community growing up. I started doing a bunch of shows at Musical Fair and at Art Park in BUA, and was sort of very much involved in the theater community from when I was like 15 onward. And it shaped, I mean, it totally shaped my love of theater. I was just a sponge working with like the Buffalo greats, who I still think are like among the best actors I've ever worked with. And I'm so excited to be returning to Buffalo to work with them alongside them and to sort of come home. It's really exciting.
Well, that's such an incredible thing and such a treat for Buffalo. My next question doesn't necessarily, you know, have to sort of be in the Buffalo theater community, although it certainly can be, but is there a show throughout your career that you're especially proud of?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's a lot of shows that I'm really proud of. I mean, actually, I love, you know, like the first time I felt like a real actor was in Buffalo doing Jonathan Tolan's play, Secrets of the Trade, with BUA. It was me and a legend's ball, as they say. It was me and Jimmy Janowski and Lisa Ludwig and Matt Crane Higgins and Dave Granville. It was just like this, you know, really, really exciting, cool sort of coming of age story that I was lucky enough to sort of be at the center of. And that was the first time that I really felt like a grown-up actor making real decisions. And I, you know, I'm so grateful to Javier for giving me that opportunity. And Drew McCabe was the director. I just like think of it. I think back at that time really fondly. You know, other times I've been able to like develop some really cool work in New York, which is exciting. I was just on tour for, I guess it was a year ago now. I was on tour for a year and a half doing the Pretty Woman tour, which I adore. I love touring so much, and to work under Jerry Mitchell was so amazing. So yeah, like I've had some really wonderful, memorable moments in my not so long career.
No, I think that that's great. I teach myself, and I always like to ask a question for my students, and I feel like sometimes I'm terrified that it comes off as being reductive, but it doesn't stop me from asking it. And it's like, is there a lesson or something that you learned maybe from being on tour for a year and a half that you take with you that maybe colors the decisions you make or the way that you approach things in your career now?
Oh, geez. Yeah, it's a totally different muscle to be in a long running show than it is to sort of like do these flash in the pan concert gigs or regional gigs where, you know, you can maybe find new stuff every night. For a long running gig, it's sort of an endurance challenge. And it really comes down to, you know, what you make of like how much fun you can have on stage. Like I, in that show, I mean, it's a charming, huge, bubbly show. And that cast was a lot of young people who had like their first big job combined with some like absolute Broadway legends. And it was a really fun group for that because it was a lot of people like exploring these cities for the first time. I just like, we found a way to make it really interesting and have fun every night on stage, truly. Yeah.
That's great. Speaking of sort of having fun, I think you're going to have a lot of fun when you start sort of rehearsal, the very quick rehearsal process for starring Buffalo's Titanic. What's exciting for you about stepping into that process?
I mean, the score. I did Rent with starring Buffalo a couple years ago now, though time really flies. And it is like, it's a totally fast and furious process. What's cool is just watching the way that the community comes together. And there are all of these moving parts, and there are people who are rehearsing now. And then, you know, some of us are going to come and like sort of slot in the week prior to rehearsal. You know, obviously doing a lot of that rehearsal process previously on our own. But I mean, the thing that I was out to drinks with Drew Fornarola, and he was like, we're doing Titanic. And I said, if you don't have a Barrett, let me know, because I'll drop everything to come in and do it. And he was like, oh, really? I was like, absolutely. It's just such a soaring score. You know, I've been listening to the cast album so much, and you just don't hear orchestrations like that anymore. It's Maury Esten. And it really just like, you think of Titanic in the context of when it happened as being this, like before it sank, even just as this massive global event with all eyes on it. And you learn, it's sort of like, how do you rise to the occasion of a score that is that grand? And this one does. Maury Esten really knocked it out of the park. There's this really long sequence at the beginning that's basically the entire introduction, that's just the launching of the Titanic, and it culminates in this huge choral number, which is everyone saying farewell, farewell, Godspeed, Titanic. And it's in, I think, 8 vocal parts. It and soaring is like really the only word that I can think of to capture it. It is so beautiful. So I can't wait to sing that score. I can't wait to hear what the orchestra sounds like. I can't wait to hear what the community choir sounds like, and everybody around me. I think it's going to be an amazing time.
Tell us a little bit about the role that you're playing in Titanic.
Yeah. So this is Barrett. Barrett works in the engine room, shoveling coal into the engine. And he kind of represents like the catch-all for like the immigrants working in the like lower decks of the Titanic, and has a song sort of kicks off the show, about how he and all of the boys from the Midlands, and the Irish folks that he is working with all got to where they are. And the screws are turning at 72 is what he keeps singing. So they keep pushing the ship faster, perhaps against their better judgment, but sort of to prove this thing, and we all know how that turned out. He's this kid who, has a sweetheart back home who he plans to marry. And there's this gorgeous duet called The Night Was Alive, which do you know the show? Yeah, it's called The Night Was Alive. He's dictating a telegram that's going back to shore to his sweetheart, asking him to marry him. And the telegraph operator, Bird, is taking it down as he's sort of just doing this off-the-cuff thing. And again, like one of my favorite songs. It's just so beautiful and obviously so tragic in the context of the show. But yeah, it's just he gets two great songs, and I, can't wait to sing them. I hope I do everybody proud.
That's great. How do you hope that audiences leave the theater after seeing Titanic?
Oh, geez. I mean, it's. I hope they're moved. I hope they have a great night at the theater. And I hope they're really struck by like the gold mine that is the Buffalo theater community. Outside of that, it's a really harrowing tale. I think that we're safely out of the spoiler alert territory here. But it really is like it sort of comes together at the end with the reprise of this Godspeed Titanic launching. I think there's going to be some tears. I also think people should know there's no Jack and Rose. I got a couple, messages from people after the announcement of this, and they're like, "Oh gosh, who are you playing in it?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay. So it's not Titanic, the movie. It's sort of an adaptation of the actual historic event with actual historical figures." So just so people can adjust their expectations there. But I think it really is this like beautiful story, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts in telling all of these vignettes of these little stories that happen with all of the souls that were lost on that ship. It's really something.
Thank you. That was beautiful. My final question is, you sort of mentioned kind of growing up inside of the Buffalo theater scene and connecting with a bunch of Buffalo luminaries. You are now going to be sort of a huge luminary to people in the community chorus, right? Sort of comes full circle. If you had one piece of advice that you might share with one of them, what might you say?
It's a numbers game, truly. Like the industry rewards resilience and kindness and hard work, and keep going. I mean, it can oftentimes feel like a dog chasing its own tail. I mean, it's a nasty business in so many ways, but the highs are so high. And I think that's what brings me and everyone back to it all the time. So, like, it truly, if you love it, if you love it, you find a way to keep doing it. Whether it's, in any capacity, you find a way to like keep the arts in your life. And that's just what I always tell people, is to sort of like keep that spark alive.
That's fantastic. Well, hopefully, we know that the spark will be there with the community inside of Titanic at with starring Buffalo coming up. Before I go, I always like to ask the people I interview, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything that you'd like to share with our listeners? And if the answer is no, that's totally cool.
No, Daniel, you really got it. In our brief 10 minutes together, thanks so much for everything. This was awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It was very nice meeting you. I look forward to seeing the show, and best of luck. The rehearsal time for Starring Buffalo is awesome and fast and fun, and I think their audiences are just gonna love it.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hope to see you there.
You will. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
I hope you will see Starring Buffalo's production of Titanic at Shays 710 Theater. For tickets, visit shays.org. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmaker engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.